Hello, and welcome to the Community Mennonite Church Podcast. This week's sermon is brought to us by Pastor Dana Olson Getty.
Please pray with me. Lord, open my lips that my mouth may proclaim your praise, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. This morning I want to tell you about my friend Tim, and before I start, I'll let you know that this is a story Tim has told himself in a book called Oriented to Faith, and I'm not going to tell you the end of the story, so if this piques your curiosity, you can find that book and find the end of the story. I have it, and you're welcome to borrow it if you'd like. So Tim is a friend of mine. Tim has been a follower of Jesus from childhood. And today, Tim lives in San Francisco. He's a part-time nurse, and he's co-pastor of a little Christian community that lives there in San Francisco. They live together, they worship together, they care for their neighbors, and especially for Salvadoran immigrant neighbors in the Mission District. And Tim is one of the most spiritually gifted people I know. Tim is one of those people that when life's really hard, he's the one you think of to call. When you need someone who won't try to fix you or diagnose you or rescue you, but who will listen and wait with you and remind you, even in the midst of everything that's hard, that you are loved and you are beloved. When Eric and I got married, I moved to Durham, North Carolina, where Eric had been living already for a year. And he had a whole life and friends and school. I didn't know anyone. Tim was the one who welcomed me with a handwritten note and a loaf of homemade chocolate chip banana bread. When Eric decided to go to Washington, D.C. with a group of friends to commit civil disobedience in witness against oppression of those who were poor and hungry, Tim noticed that I was nearly paralyzed with anxiety and asked if he could take me to a movie so I didn't have to sit at home that whole evening waiting for a call from the DC jail. And when learning how to be married turned out to be harder than I had anticipated, Tim was there, listening, praying, keeping company with both Eric and I as we learned how to become faithful life partners. Tim isn't one of those people who waits to be called on. I've seen him notice an exhausted friend who was raising three hyperactive boys under the age of six in a 600 square foot house. Tim offered to go and provide childcare and entertain those boys for the afternoon so our friend could rest. Tim's the friend who notices when a neighbor is in need of some basic medical care and quietly gathers the resources needed and arranges for the appointment. He's the one who cooked dinner during finals week when everybody in the household was in grad school. He was too, but he cooked dinner. He bakes birthday cakes, took the neighborhood kids to the pool on a hot day, cleaned the bathroom before we had a house full of guests. Tim is also a gifted preacher, writer, and theological scholar, but when I think of him, I think of the love of God shining most brightly through his delight and care for those around him. He's one of the very best pastors I've had the privilege of knowing. But Tim's life very nearly could have taken a different path. So Tim grew up the child of Christian missionaries in Uganda. His family was warm and loving. He did well in school. He went to a Christian college, and he was mentored by one of the leaders of his parents' mission organization. But Tim had a secret. He knew from the time he was really young that he was attracted to boys and not to girls, and that was really a problem in his community and in his family. As he grew up, he hoped, as the author of a Christian book about adolescence had promised, that if he just tried his hardest to follow Jesus, to be faithful, that somehow everything would work out and he would end up happily married to a good woman with a house full of kids. But he became a teenager and he still felt attracted to guys. and that became his most terrifying secret in life. When classmates bullied him or bullied each other using derogatory terms for gay people, he began to take that personally, to believe that he was fundamentally loathsome, repulsive, unlovable. In college, Tim sought help from a therapist. She sent him to an intensive spiritual program designed to help him change his sexual orientation. And Tim worked really hard in that program. He fasted and prayed. He poured himself into self-reflection and spiritual disciplines. He faithfully attended those group meetings. But at the end of the year, he concluded, the new skills he'd gained, the spiritual skills, the reflective skills, they served him well. But he remained attracted to men. It didn't change. And so he hit a wall. He'd exhausted all the options he knew of for changing his sexual orientation, and he became overcome with shame and with despair. And one night after an anonymous sexual encounter that left him filled with self-loathing, Tim found himself considering how he might end his own life. Tim survived that night, and I am very grateful that he did. He decided that he had one last-ditch effort to find a way forward. He went to stay with a mentor who'd recently moved into a little Christian community in the Mission District of San Francisco in order to be good neighbors to new refugee and immigrant neighbors there. And on one of the first nights that he was with that community, Tim found the courage to say to the group, I'm a Christian, and I'm gay, and I have no idea how those two things could possibly go together. But I'd like to try to figure it out with you all. In the silence that followed, Tim's mentor replied with a sparkle of adventure and delight in his eyes, I don't know what to think about homosexuality, but by faith I believe it is God's gift to you. And what I know is that you are God's gift to us. You are God's gift to us. Tim says that those words and the days and weeks and months of living them out, of living that truth that followed, they saved his life and they changed his life. You are God's gift to us. One of my hesitations about the ways that I've sometimes had conversations in the church about spiritual gifts is this. Sometimes we end up with something that looks a lot like a spiritualized version of the same hierarchy of status and respect and accomplishment that we all live with every day in our work and school and family lives. Sometimes I fear that those of us who better fit the expectations of our society for being successful or respectable or accomplished or who we think would be a leader will be considered more spiritually gifted. And those who lack something significant in the face of cultural ideals will be seen as or see ourselves as loathsome or shameful or less. My fear is that we'll conflate these skills, talents, accomplishments with the gifts God has given to the church in giving us to each other. So spiritual gift inventories, they're helpful. I like doing them. I think they tell me more about who I am and who you all are because it's helpful to know ourselves, how we thrive, what we like to do, what comes naturally to us, and what is more challenging. But our fundamental calling as people is something deeper and more human than that. It's not only about what we can do. Our calling is to offer and receive each other as we really are, terrifying secrets and all, as God's gift to the church. Our calling is to join in this mutuality and love of God through the offering and receiving of each other as gifts of God's goodness and God's grace. 1 Peter, the letter that we heard from a minute ago, was written to a network of congregations in Asia Minor. That's in modern-day Turkey. And these were congregations made up of people who lacked some very significant things. They were doubly outsiders. They were resident aliens, displaced people who lived in places, cities, or provinces where they were not citizens. And in that time and place, if you were not a citizen, you had very limited social, legal, and political rights. These people had no permanent place of belonging, no permanent home. They could be expelled from their place of residency at any time. And many of the members of these congregations were slaves or women. So these were two of the most vulnerable, powerless, dishonored, and abused social groups in that society. And then, on top of all that, these were people who refused to participate in the worship of the emperor. And that made their neighbors see them as socially divisive, a danger to the fundamental structure of society, people who were disloyal to the things that mattered most, that were attempting to undermine the fundamental cultural values on which their society was built. And because of that, these people were harassed and rejected and despised. So imagine for a minute the dangers and difficulties that are faced by people in our community and society who don't have documents, who are living here without any legal authorization, or by people who practice a faith that many other people fear or hate. Maybe that'll give you a little bit of a picture of what these people's lives were like. Many of the people in these congregations would have been considered profoundly ungifted by their neighbors and their society. And many of them likely would have had a hard time seeing themselves as gifted or as a gift to anyone. Likely many of them had been abused and treated as loathsome or repulsive at times. But the author of 1 Peter, he's a leader in the church in Rome, went to fairly great lengths to write and send this letter to these geographically distant, far-off congregations to tell them this: you are God's gift to us. You may be people without a legal home, but you have a permanent home in the household of God with us. You may be considered loathsome, repulsive, lacking by those around you, but you are beloved family to us. You may be considered poor, powerless, unworthy of dignity in your economic, social, and legal context, but in the household of God, you are stewards. You are valued members of this household who've been entrusted with the important responsibility of administering the household wealth. The wealth of the house of God. You are fully authorized to manage and expend what God has given for the good of the whole. You have an important and valued and trusted role. And this wealth that has been entrusted to you as a household, it's each other. You are bearers of God's image, dwelling places of God's Spirit, embodied in expressions of God's goodness, through your speaking and through your serving. When you offer yourselves to the community of faith, you are offering God's best, God's treasure. When you offer yourself to the community of faith, terrifying secrets and all, the only truth-filled response is, you are God's gift to us. We receive you as bearers of God's goodness, as signs of God's grace. So as we continue as a congregation to think about the question of spiritual gifts, of how God's treasure is in us as clay jars, I think that we need to consider the question not just what spiritual gifts do I have, but how can I participate in living God's love in this time and place, in this season of my life, in this particular community, in this particular congregation? In what way am I called to offer myself and to receive others as a sign of God's grace, as a way of participating in God's abundance of love and goodness in this place, in this time? This morning in our worship service, we're going to be recognizing the transition into retirement of six members of our congregation. And retirement is a transition that for many people brings up some of these fundamental questions of our value and our worth. Who am I if I no longer do the work that has been the cornerstone of my life? Where will I find belonging and purpose and respect if I don't daily have a group of colleagues or those who benefit from my work to interact with? If I no longer have a key to the office or a nameplate on the door, who am I? Am I still a gift to the people of God? For those of you who are retiring, and for all of us, we are here this morning to receive each other in all seasons of life as God's gift to each other, as God's treasure. We are here to receive and affirm each other in the seasons of life when we're energetic and capable and sharp, and also in the seasons of life when we are exhausted and struggling and at less than our best, as God's gifts to the household of God. We are here to speak and live the truth that each one of us, not only those at the peak of our human capacities, but also those among us who need care every day in order to live, we are all a gift of God to the community of God's people. We are here to say to each other, you have a home among us. You belong. You have an important role as a steward of God's wealth entrusted to us. You have a place at this table. You are a gift of God, a bearer of God's image, and a sign of God's grace. Thanks be to God.
Thank you for listening to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Our theme music is a setting of John Wesley's text, Jesus, I Believe You're Near, composed by Matt Carlson. Jeremy Nafziger arranged it for strings. To learn more about our congregation or to plan a visit, please check out our website at cmcva.org.